Thank you for joining us on Warrior Women Speak. I'm Judge Rosemarie Aquilina, author of Just Watch Me, and I'm joined with my co-host, Sherry Botwin, LCSW, social worker and trauma specialist, and author of Thriving After Trauma, Stories of Living and Healing. We have created this podcast for your enjoyment and so that we all can talk about our issues and learn together about how to deal with trauma and those things that spring up in our everyday life. Please join us for every episode and let us know what you want to talk about. Now for the show. Welcome back to season three. I'm so excited, Sherry, to talk with you, although the topic for today is a little disturbing, but we have had a number of cases. We have R. Kelly sentenced to 30 years. We have Cosby sentenced to 10 years. We have Ghislaine Maxwell sentenced now to 20 years. Although Cosby gets off on a technicality, Ghislaine Maxwell is now arguing the same technicality. And then we also have the civil suit against Cosby, where there was a $500,000 award because they went back to, I think it was 1975, assault of a teenager. But the theme here now is we're going to prosecute, we'll go back and grab you if you've done this to a minor, and they're allowing victims to speak. And I think that is really the best thing for a victim, but I am a little concerned because in each of these cases, victims were allowed to speak. I know that in the Maxwell case, they were allowed to submit victim impact statements, but they were only allowed to share verbally, orally in courtroom, a shorter version of the written one that they had prepared and given to the court. So my question to you about the victim impact statements, because I've had a lot of experience with that and so have you, is that when I see them in court, I see them literally drop their pain. And I never put a time limit. I never put a number limit on how many. If you've been affected by a crime, you're allowed to speak in my courtroom. I've been a judge now for 18 years. That has been my policy for 18 years. I think when you put a limit on someone's pain, you really are again shutting them down. From the therapist's point of view, what is the impact of that?
I feel like there's a lot of impact. If a judge is going to allow someone to make a statement there, I feel there should be no guidelines or restrictions about what or how long they speak. What ends up happening is it's almost like it sounds like the judge is almost doing the victim a favor by saying, well, I'm going to let you speak, but I'm only going to let you speak for this amount of time. And I think with all that victims go through in this process, the Judith Huff, which you made reference to, who just won her civil suit against Cosby, she prepared for that trial for 7.5 years. And I'm not sure if the judge gave a time limit on her victim statement. I didn't hear that that happened in that particular courtroom. But imagine holding on to something for 47 years, then deciding, because she could, because in California they dropped the statute of limitations, then deciding to pursue civil suit. And then after 7.5 years and having to sit in that courtroom and recount her experiences. The other problem I had, and I wanted to ask you about this, in that case, Cosby wasn't in the courtroom. He didn't come to any of that trial. So she gave a victim statement, but he wasn't in the room. So I feel like we're talking about two different examples, but they're both very much the same. People who go through these experiences, survivors who decide they want to take legal action, they should have the right to say whatever it is that they want. There should not, I don't think you can put a time limit on the impact that what you did to me, to say, I'm only going to talk for 2 minutes or 5 minutes. I think in some ways it does them a disservice, which I know this is sort of what you're asking me. I haven't talked to any of these particular victims, but I can imagine, I know survivors, when people are in therapy and we are at the end of the session and they're maybe in the middle of telling me something that happened and we need to end the session, that can be painful. So I can't even imagine what that must feel like to be told, here's your opportunity, but you only have this much time.
Yeah, you know, it's not the same thing at all, but it's sort of like, you know, being a little kid and saying, you're going to get a bicycle for your birthday. You're going to get a bicycle. You're going to get a bicycle. And you have this big hope and you open the bicycle. It's exactly what you want. And then you're told, well, you can only ride it around the block one time.
Yeah.
So you have all this anticipation and you got what you wanted. And then your bubble is burst because there's also this disappointment that, well, I was told I had a bicycle. Why can I only go around the block one time? And, you know, it's probably a poor example because, you know, it's your bicycle and you can get on it again. But I think that when you, regardless of what it is as human beings, once you have that anticipation and then you are let down by any disappointment, it really leaves you feeling not just disappointed, but deflated and victimized and like you didn't deserve it in the first place and so many negative things. I think what I see and what I hear from victims later is how much better they felt and how they could now move forward because they were able to release their story, release their pain. And the rest of the things, clearly they need to work on with a trained trauma therapist because there's a lot of deep-seated trauma, but you have to open the floodgate. And I feel like when they talk in court openly and face their predator, they are really facing that boogeyman in the closet. And now they can begin to start sleeping at night, begin to really wholeheartedly work on the deep-seated trauma and move their life forward. In terms of Cosby not being there, he probably got permission from the judge. I don't recall the reason why he wasn't there, but he has maintained his innocence. He may have just said, well, I'm just not going to show. If I were the judge, I would have held him in contempt because I think he needs to be there for each piece of it. And he's required to be there. I don't know what the story was there. I know he's had some health problems, but I would have maybe offered that victim another date and ordered him to be there. I really find it troubling that his victim, although she had the opportunity, and I think there were other victims who came forward who also spoke in that civil case, I feel like she got gypped not being able to face him and say, you hurt me, because that is healing, isn't it?
It's so healing. And even if you think about when they read the verdict, because I was at the Cosby trial, the one with Constant, and he was there for that. So to be able to be a witness to the alleged perpetrator being told the verdict, that's powerful too. That's part of the confrontation. That's part of the victory that comes from having a system that sometimes actually does work. So I'm not, you know, again, I'm not really sure how that comes to be. The one thing that I think about, I'm not sure if you saw this, but after R. Kelly was sentenced, I saw this some this week, and they did this after the Cosby trial too. There were many victims who stood up at a platform and shared their thoughts and feelings. They did not give a victim impact statement, but they did come forward. They showed themselves on national television and they spoke about the justice they felt after R. Kelly was sentenced. So I thought that was powerful. And again, with Cosby, what ended up happening, there were so many alleged victims that weren't able to testify. After the trial, we had a whole nother, it wasn't a hearing, but we had like I forget how Gloria Allred called it, but it was like a press conference where I listened to about 10 other victims who did not have an opportunity to speak in court, and they wrote and read their victim statement. Again, not quite the same. Bill Cosby was not in the room, but for some of them, I could feel that felt healing for them. Even though it wasn't ideal, it was still a platform for them to feel heard and to share what they thought about what had happened, especially because many of them were in the courtroom. The same with Judith Huff. There were about 8 or 9 alleged Cosby victims, one of them who you will be hearing about in the coming months, because she has filed a civil suit also, Lily Bernard. So I think that that in a way was helpful and healing, but again, not ideal with him not being in the room.
Yeah, I totally agree. I also think it's interesting when you look at these cases and you draw a line. So we have R. Kelly who says, well, I saw my childhood sweetheart die and that traumatized me. And I was sexually abused by my sister and my landlord. And so all of these traumas that I had as a child led to this. It's really not my fault. It's because the trauma that I suffered. But here he is, a grown man, certainly had money, access to help. And he's saying that this hypersexuality, the things that he did with all these other women that really was horrifying. They said, I think over and over again, the women that he assaulted said that they were at his mercy and subject to his whims. And, you know, they were so traumatized what he did to them.
Yeah.
They'll never recover from. It will take years and years. And yet he excuses it away. Then we have Cosby who says, well, I'm innocent. I hold my innocence. I didn't do any of this. And here we've all heard the testimony, at least in the civil case, there is a finding of responsible. And, you know, you have to understand that criminal is beyond a reasonable doubt. And civil is more likely than not. It's preponderance. So the burden isn't as high. And then we have Ghislaine Maxwell, who says, well, you know, I didn't do anything. I'm getting charged and convicted now because Epstein did these things. He got off because he's dead. So I get to serve for his crimes. But here she's not recognizing that she was part and parcel to this. He didn't act without her. She was a co-conspirator. And I really think that all of these cases speak very loudly to, let's speak on behalf of others. Don't be a co-conspirator. If you are a co-conspirator, you have a chance of getting charged, getting convicted, and either paying a hefty fine, going to prison, or both.
So it's interesting what you're saying, because as you talk about each of their positions, none of them are consistent. They're all not matching. You have R. Kelly, who, when he was first charged, sat down on an interview with Gayle King at CBS, vehemently denied doing anything. He didn't talk with Gayle King about his horrific history. I don't know if you remember the interview, but at one point he stood up and he started shouting at her. Then you have Ghislaine, who's saying that she had no responsibility for any of what happened, but she's also pleading, she pled not guilty, right? Like she said, right. She wasn't guilty, but then right. Once she's realizing, well, I'm kind of screwed now in a way, she's not saying, she's not taking responsibility, but her message is very inconsistent. Then you have Cosby, and this is where my head spins, saying, I didn't do anything wrong, but I sat in that courtroom and the world listened to the deposition he gave in 2005, where he admitted to drugging, and he didn't call it sexual assault, but he said that was what he would do. He would give women drugs and then he would have sex with them. So this is the thing, they don't match. And my issue with what you're talking about, I have empathy. And of course I understand people who've been abused as children, who've suffered different types of trauma. Yes, if they don't get the help that they need, if they block or repress, like I did in so many people that I've met, they're more likely to then repeat the cycle. But these are people, R. Kelly didn't talk about repressing this trauma. R. Kelly talked about, well, these things happened to me, and he wanted the court to feel bad for him. He was trying to make an excuse. And that is, then I want to start shouting, because that is not okay. He didn't apologize. He didn't take responsibility. He's thinking, what can I do to get a lesser sentence, or what can I do to get in less trouble? My feeling is, if you know that something happened to you, and again, some of us don't remember being abused as children until we get into our late middle 20s, but when and if you figure it out, it is your obligation as a person in society. If you're going to be in relationships with other people, it's, you're not obligated to go to therapy, but you're certainly obligated to take some type of ownership for what happened to you. And that does not make it okay for you to then go and do it to other people. It's awful.
Yeah. And I agree with what you say that, and I've seen this over and over again, that people don't remember the trauma they've gone through. And then trauma causes trauma because they weren't able to get help because they don't even realize it, because their brain goes into protective mode and then it suppresses it. So I get that. But here's what I don't get is, and I see it all the time, is there are a few human beings I have seen who don't know right from wrong, but most of us do know right from wrong. So if you have a tendency to sexually assault someone or have this urge to sexually assault or shoot at someone or slap someone, and you know it is wrong, go and ask a therapist, a doctor, someone who can help you figure it out so that you understand the foundation of why this is happening and how you can get over it, rather than waiting until you have assaulted so many people. Even one person is too much. And that's the real issue I have, because I am a judge who hears, I have 100% criminal docket. I hear every single week people saying, well, you know, this happened to me. And so I really wasn't, you know, I didn't know what was going on. And so you should give me a lighter sentence because, you know, I was a victim. And what they want me to do is look at their trauma and minimize the trauma that someone else has. And I have a real issue with that because of the lack of accountability, because of the showing the court that they don't know right from wrong, that they have an excuse, like somehow on the calendar, it's abuse another person day because you were abused and you get a get out of jail free card. And you just don't. In my courtroom, that pisses me off because I really try, you know, for rehabilitation before prison every single time. But when I hear someone, or when I see this escalation, when I see people denounce the horrifying acts that they have done and say they didn't do it, they didn't know. Oh, and if they did, they have some kind of excuse that they knew about, didn't answer, and it's okay. I think that they are actually more dangerous, because how do you treat somebody like that?
Right. Because in a way they're still making excuses, and they're saying they're somehow trying to make something awful okay. And it's not, this is the thing I think that we need to work on as a society. The problem, I think, and we've talked about this so many times, when somebody is abused as a child, there's a little part of that, even 4 or 5 year old or even 3 year old, that knows something is not okay. Something feels wrong. I know that there's something happening that's not okay. From a very young age, kids will start to feel when something is wrong. The problem is, because we still live in a society that is silencing and shaming towards survivors, people are afraid to say, I was abused because, and this is more for men actually than for women, they worry, if I go to a therapist or if I tell my best friend or if I ask for help, they're going to think that I'm going to be a predator. This is a problem. So here's the thing. I think we have to make it easier for people to go and say, I am an abuse survivor, and not have to worry that if you admit to being abused as a child, that you're not going to be deemed automatically a predator. This is a problem, because I can't tell you how many people I've sat with, and when they start talking to me about their abuse history, and especially the men that I've worked with, they tell me that I'm going to be afraid of them. They worry that I won't work with them anymore. They worry. One person said, are you going to call the police? He told me that he was sexually assaulted by a priest. And then he asked me later in that session, are you going to call the police? He had an adult son. Call the police for what? So that piece, I think we need to work on. I think that these high profile cases that we're talking about today and their lack of accountability is pathetic and is so not okay. But for the general population, I think this is something that we do need to work on. And I think what I would say to people, because I know what it feels like to admit to being abused as an adult, we need to say to people that when and if you start remembering things that happened during your childhood, if you are having impulses, if you, for example, if when I was working with, talking with somebody the other day, she's a mom and she's got younger kids. And we started talking about her fears of being abusive. And she started telling me about different situations where her one little girl was in trouble. And we actually talked about if there was a part of her that wanted to abuse her child. And she admitted that there was a part of her that wanted to strike out and hurt the child. I thought, you know how brave that was that she could admit that? Do you know how scary it is to sit in a therapist's office? I didn't start talking about any of that stuff. I don't even think I talked about that stuff with my therapist. I think I wrote about it because it's so scary. But if you can acknowledge and admit that you can imagine doing things to your kid that was done to you, that's what you need to do. That's what healing is. It's normal. When you've been through trauma, when you've been hurt by your parent or by your boyfriend or by whoever, R. Kelly said he was abused by, who did he say? By his sister?
His sister and his landlord.
Okay. So for him, it would be normal. If I were sitting with him in therapy and he said to me, I'm having urges to sex traffic these young women, I would say to him, good for you for saying that. How do we help you when you have those impulses, not act on them? So there is a way to not repeat the cycle, but you have to be able to speak it. And it's so, so scary to do that.
Yeah. So what I have to say about that is really, I think shows like this, books like yours, talking about what's happened. I know you are on the news frequently talking about these kinds of issues. I think these conversations need to continue, and we need to make sure there's safe spaces, whether you are someone who is abusing someone or someone being abused, to talk about it so that we get rid of the stigma and it becomes really flipping the script to, how can I help you? How can we make a safe place for you? How can we address what you're feeling, the urge to assault someone or the urge to go under the bed and hide because you're afraid because you have been assaulted, and get rid of the stigma from both ends. And these kinds of cases, I see it all the time. It breaks apart families. I have families who sit on each side of the courtroom and they're not talking to each other because they're playing the blame game instead of saying, how can we come together to help this person in our family, whether it's the predator or the victim, because there's so much guilt and shame, and it does not heal anybody. It doesn't help anyone. If you judge yourself, if you judge anyone, you know, what does that accomplish? What you need to do is make sure that you're getting them to the right place. If someone says, I feel like your client did, that this is going to happen, or that I'm going to strike out at my kid, or that I'm going to traffic someone, or whatever it is, get them the help instead of saying, how dare you even say that? Get them the help. If someone says they're a victim, get them the help. We have to take the stigma and the judging out of it, because that didn't happen to you, but they've come to you for help. And the minute you say, well, why didn't you tell me, or why'd you let that happen, or why are you thinking that? It's that why that shames and blames. All we are required to do, I think, or what we must do, is simply get someone help. Take them to a trained therapist. If you don't know any place, if they don't have insurance, have them see their doctor or community mental health. There's one in every community. There's so many options out there. There's the telehealth now. I mean, there's therapy online. There's so many options we never even had 5 years ago or 10 years ago. Today, you can get help almost anywhere, but you have to be able to acknowledge it in a safe place.
Well, and you know what? We have to educate people, because I'm hearing about stories of people who go to therapy and tell their story. I was talking to somebody a couple of weeks ago, and she went to a therapist and talked about being sexually assaulted. The therapist said to her, why didn't you report it to the police? So that's
the wrong answer.
Right. So I agree with you. There's millions of places around here to get the help. But the problem is that therapists, lawyers, doctors, anybody working with children or working in the helping field, even nurses, there's so many people out here who don't understand. I think what we're talking about today, I don't think a lot of people really understand how normal it is to want to repeat. And it's not that you wake up in the morning, you say, well, I want to abuse my child because I was abused. It's not like that, but it's so normal to have these impulses. People don't understand that that's normal. That's how you know you are abused. When you're picturing yourself hurting somebody else in the same way, it's another way to know it. So I think, you know, when I think about the shows that we do, I mean, this is more me in my fantasy land, but I wish we could send these shows to some of the judges and the therapists and whoever else is shaming and blaming victims and letting predators off the hook. Can you imagine if you were the judge in the R. Kelly trial and he stood up and instead of making an excuse, can you imagine if he said something like, now I'm realizing what the impact of what happened to me and what, how not getting help, not only did it mess up my life, but I'm now realizing I messed up so many other people's lives in addition. Can you imagine if that were his response?
That's not usually the response I see from predators. However, I've had many cases, assault of crimes and attempted murders and just other really heinous crimes. And I will say this doesn't fit. What is going on? What happened in your life? What were you feeling? Let's take you back, because I always find it interesting, the backstory. It helps me sentence. And I've had multiple people say, my grandmother died, my mother died. My parents just up when I was 16, they just moved away and said I could fend for myself. And there's so many things that happen in people's lives that they're angry about. And so hurt people hurt other people. And I think that when I hear those things, if it is a situation where I can say, okay, we're going to get you some help, I will put them on probation. I might say, look, you know, you have a year in jail, I suspend it, or I might put them for so many months in jail and then put them out depending what they need, because sometimes it leads to addiction. The person they hurt, it's not someone else, it's themselves. If you are using crack, cocaine, heroin, meth, all of those things, you're an alcoholic. The person you're killing is yourself. That's still an act that is heinous. And you need to understand it's not okay to hurt yourself. I see people who are bulimic and cutting and doing all sorts of things. It doesn't have to be drug addiction. They're hurting themselves because they've numbed out so bad. And so I say, look, we're going to get you some help. And they seem shocked by that. But when you can help someone, regardless of the situation, you're really telling them that they are a valuable human being, that they need to value themselves, that you value them, and that you believe in them, and that they can get the help and do better. And I think that helps turn people around. Doesn't help turn everybody around, but when I hear that remorse, that backstory, the reasons, and they're legitimate, not just like an excuse. So to, you know, just kind of make me want to cry. Oh, you had such a bad, horrible childhood. I'm going to not do this to you when you've done this horrifying thing. That doesn't wash well with me. But when I can find the real reason and help them and they want the help, that will help turn things around.
And I imagine for victims in your courtroom who experience that, that is probably very healing for the victim to be a witness to the alleged perpetrator being honest and upfront about what he or she has done. I don't think it happens often. I don't think it happens nearly enough. And I don't think it should have to take getting in a courtroom for it to happen, but it does happen. And I think that if we could talk more openly about all this and be a more accepting society, I believe that more of these abusers would ask for help sooner. Some of them may not even end up having criminal charges against them because they'll realize that they need help and they'll go get it. You know, the woman that I'm talking to you about, if she's been getting help for decades, she's been getting help the whole time she's been a parent, and she started getting help before she had her kids. But once she had her kids, that's when she started recognizing that the impulses to repeat the cycle, that's when she started to really get in touch with that. And I think this too, like with Cosby and his vehement denial of any of these allegations, to me, there are some people out there who are just lacking any empathy. To me, when we talk about somebody like him, or even maybe R. Kelly, who I'm not as familiar with, I haven't seen him talk as much. These are people who are narcissistic. These are not just predators. These are people who are sociopathic, narcissistic, who literally cannot imagine how what they choose to do will affect somebody else. And to me, that's like, I don't want to say it's a lost cause, but that's kind of what it feels like. When I was listening to Cosby talk the other day, they were showing clips of him in the car a year ago when he was released from prison. They didn't release some of these clips until this week. June 30th was 1 year. And at one point he said, yeah, I mean, I was sitting in prison with murderers and rapists. And I thought, I had to be like, wait, did he actually say that? And I thought, this man truly believes he's done nothing wrong. He just said he was in a prison with rapists, but he was in prison for rape.
Right. And those are the most dangerous prisoners who I see, is where they can't acknowledge that they're part of that. They have yet to realize the damage and danger they've caused. They're a danger to themselves. They're a danger to others. They're a danger to their community. They can't be rehabilitated on the outside, maybe inside prison, maybe. And that's a big maybe. But the first realization of any problem is to realize that you have one, whatever it is, whether you're an alcoholic or whether you're a sexual predator. You have to know there's a problem, understand that you have it, and want to change and seek help. I think one of the most important things that I do as a judge, I don't think it works with sexual predators, but with people who harm others, and I've had a lot of great feedback on this, and maybe you can comment on it, is I order everybody, literally everybody, to, I should say maybe almost everyone, once in a while there's someone I give a fine and they go on their merry way, but anybody I'm keeping on probation, or even if I'm putting them in jail or prison, I'm having them attend cognitive behavioral therapy. And I have had so many people come back and say, I thought I would hate it, and I actually learned so much about myself, because cognitive behavioral therapy, when you're doing it with someone who's really trained in it, it helps someone look at the errors in their ways, in the ways they think, right? The errors, and then helps them to make better choices. And I always tell them when I sentence them, this is something that every single human being should go through to learn, because we all are imperfect. And we can all look at, you know, what's the rubric of how we're thinking? Is it right? Is it wrong? What are some other choices we can make that we haven't thought about for whatever reason? Do I have that right? Because I have tremendously positive feedback on cognitive behavioral.
I mean, 100%, because it's all about restructuring your mindset and talking back to those parts of you that want to go out and cause harm to yourself and to others. So it's a great strategy. I think the other thing with CBT and also DBT, which is slightly different because there's a mindfulness piece, is it also teaches people how to do better self-care. So for instance, when I was talking with this mom who was having urges to strike her kid, she then went and stopped eating that day. She said to me she didn't eat dinner because she felt like she didn't deserve to eat because she had that thought. So the part of the therapy that needs attention too is, once you recognize that you have these thoughts that you wish you didn't have, instead of using self-destruction, turn to self-care. I'm imagining some of the people that you've had good success with, probably that's part of what is happening, because you're not just learning how to restructure your mindset or be able to identify your impulses. You're also learning what to do with them once you realize you have them. And we have a choice. We can go beat ourselves up and feel like horrible people for having a thought, or we can say to ourselves, it's normal to have those thoughts. It's healthy to be able to identify the thoughts, and you're not a bad person for having them.
Right. We have to turn those negatives into positives, turn the destruction into self-care. And then, you know, I tell everybody, like, I'm still fixing my bathroom. I've dumped everything and I'm trying to reorganize it, so it takes me less time to find things, and I'm throwing out all the junk. And one of the things I'm not throwing away which looks probably awful in my bathroom to everybody else, and we've talked about this many times in the show, is my little affirmations on my mirror. It doesn't matter if you're the president of the United States, if you're a judge, if you're a therapist, if you are someone who plays golf or all day, I don't know, whatever you do in your life. These positive affirmations, you first have to say them to yourself before you can extend them to others. And you should always take care of yourself, not beat yourself up, because first and foremost, we are humans. We make mistakes. Sometimes there are people who make criminal mistakes. They still can make amends. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there are people who make mistakes against themselves. They're cutting, they're drugging, whatever. They can still make amends. They can still take care of themselves. When you take care of yourselves, then you can take care of others. But there are a lot of people who don't know that lesson.
Yeah. And I think one of the things I want to mention before we end today is when you were talking, when we were just talking a minute ago about how there are some people who really are incapable of feeling empathy or having any understanding of how they could be causing harm. One of the things that I would want to say to people is if that's your relationship with whoever harmed you, you really want to think about your boundaries in that relationship. For instance, I work with people who will continue to see their perpetrators because their perpetrators are also their parents or their siblings. And I think, like you're saying, in cases where there's ownership and healing and acknowledgement, it can be okay with lots of boundaries. But if you don't, if you're in a relationship with somebody who's more like a Cosby, you really want to be very mindful about how much time you spend with that person, what you think and feel before, during, and after you're with that person. So part of the CBT therapy that you're talking about, it also is very helpful for people who are struggling to set boundaries with their perpetrators because they feel like they're horrible people for not wanting to see the person that hurt them. But I think, I mean, that's probably a whole nother show, but I think it's important to state it. Because I think that some of the people who end up committing crimes are also people who tried to remove themselves from the harmful people in their own lives and didn't have a way to deal with all their anger and their feelings of betrayal and despondency and grief. And that's part of why they go out and do things to other people.
And if you are suffering at the hands of someone like a Cosby and Epstein and R. Kelly, there is help out there, and just know that you're not alone. There are so many people, and we really do need to start talking about this. And if you're wondering, am I dealing with someone like that? You know, ask yourself, are you happy? Are you doing what you want to do? Should you be in this relationship? Have they crossed your boundary? Are they controlling you? Are you able to spend money? Are you able to go freely wherever you want to? Are you able to say no to sex? Are you able to wear what you want, whether it's makeup or clothes? I mean, it's interesting to me that when we go shopping and we put on a dress and it looks horrible, we don't buy that dress, right? We want a dress that makes us look great, right? And we feel good in it. We need to feel good in every single relationship. And if you are not feeling it, right? You don't look good in it, in your mind with this relationship, like a dress, don't buy it, walk away, walk away. There's always going to be another relationship. And there's just a ton of people out there who are willing to help you. Even if you feel unlovable, we love you. And there are lots of people out there who love you, right? We're willing to help.
Oh, that was so super sweet. I loved that. And it's true. I mean, it's true. And part of me wants to say to you, listen, easier said than done, but 100%, 1,000,000%, or whatever people say, 1,000% agree.
But you're right. It is easier said than done, but it's again, that mindset. You have to turn those negatives into positives, and it has to start from within you, and you're not to blame on anything that's happened to you, but stepping out of it, you know, there are people like us who will support you. You are not alone. I just think that message has to be out there because there's so many people who hung on to R. Kelly or Cosby because of who they were. Or Epstein because of the money, who they knew, who they were, what they said about you, what they wanted you to do. You know, those things happen. And if that's happened to you, it's okay. But there's help out there. You are not alone. Look how many people have come forward just in the last 5 years. Thousands, hopefully. Thousands of victims have come forward and said, me too. And there'll be thousands more. So standing together, we can make this change. And it's not all right what happened, but we can make it better.
And I think, again, one piece of good news, if you think about the last month, we had 3 high profile cases where there was justice. That's yes. Pretty good news. It's not all of what we need to happen, but it's certainly a sign that we're moving in the right direction.
Yeah, because it says no matter who you are, whether you're the highest person in the country or the lowest person, you cannot abuse someone. We will tell, you will be prosecuted. And that is a far cry from where it was 10 or 20 or 30 years ago. And 50 years ago, we didn't even talk about this.
Yeah. And you know what? Gloria Allred, she said this at the podium after the trial. She was talking about how in the state of California, now that they removed the statute of limitations, it doesn't matter how long ago it happened. Adult survivors of abuse have rights now and they can take action. And that to me is a powerful statement. It's certainly not happening everywhere in this country, but it's happening in California. And Judith Huff, that was the first case adult survivor of sexual abuse that was tried. And look at the outcome. It wasn't the best outcome, but it was good. They found him guilty. They said that he did what she said that he did. So we're getting somewhere.
We are. And for those of you who've gone through this, who may be listening and the jury said not guilty to your predator, you still had the strength to stand up to him. So it's still a win, even if the jury found not guilty. I've seen a lot of jurors decide a case, and I'm wondering how did they do that? But it's on evidence, right? There has to be evidence beyond a reasonable doubt. And I know there's a mindset that we need to change that says, well, the evidence was there, but that's the life they chose. Nobody chooses this life. And I think that the more it's out there, the more everyone comes forward, we're going to realize that no one chooses to be abused. No one stays because they just think it's fun. There's all sorts of reasons. There's gaslighting and grooming and lack of the financial ability. And there's so many reasons people stay. We've done other shows and then we'll do some more. But I think it's just so important that we keep the conversation going and don't be dissuaded if the jury finds not guilty. Just hug yourself and say you did it. You went through the finish line that many people never get to. And that in and of itself is a win. It's not about what the jury says. It's about winning for yourself, using your voice, getting out there and saying, I was wronged. And then hopefully you win, but not everybody wins. I've seen, as I've said, bad outcomes where I've thought, how did they do that? The evidence was there, but I'm not the trier of fact. I decide what the law is. I don't decide how important each piece of evidence is, but I always think, I hope the victim knows, and I want to publicly say that the victim should know that they had their day in court and they should just really take pride that they went the distance.
And if you are a victim and you choose not to go to court, but you choose to disclose to a therapist, that's a win too. If you're able to speak out loud to somebody who can hear what you have to say and accept what you're saying is the truth, and you can do it in a way where you feel like you're taking care of yourself and finally standing up for yourself, that's a huge victory as well.
Absolutely. So get some help if you need it. If you need a friend, we are here and we believe in you and know that you matter and we stand with you. So enjoy the great weather out there. I hope wherever you are in the world, it's great weather. And if it's not great weather outside, make sure you do a dance in your house and make great weather inside. How's that?
I think people can probably picture what that's going to look like too.
Well, I don't tell them often, but you're usually dancing around your house with your cat and your son. And you always make a happy place. I think you're a good example of that. So they can do it too.
Absolutely. 100%. So you have fun dancing in your house over there when it's raining.
All right. Until next time, this is Warrior Women Speak. Please write us a review on Apple Podcasts. And thanks for joining us in the third season. We're so excited. See you next time.
See you next time. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us today on Warrior Women Speak. It is truly an honor to have conversations that are difficult to have, but that we need to have. Judge Aquilina and myself are so excited to announce that we are now doing speaking engagements in addition to our podcast. To learn more, you can email us directly at warriorwomenspeak@gmail.com. And don't forget to rate and review our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen if you are enjoying what you're hearing. Until next time.